Tereo Ererangi o Te Mania. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
E nā mana, e nā reo, e nā hō e whā. Tēnā koutou katoa. No mai ki tēne hōtaka. Speak up. Kōrerotia. Tune in as our guests speak up, sharing their unique and powerful experiences and opinions. And may you also be inspired to speak up when the moment's right. Ko tāna kātana hau, ko o te rangatira o te hōtaka reo i rirangi speak up kōrerotia. Te kōpapa o te rā, ko te reo Māori, te wiki o te reo Māori hoki. I'm really, really excited to be talking about Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori and Whaka Ora Tia Te Reo Māori, bringing life, reviving, celebrating Te Reo Māori for the 50th anniversary of Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori. What a milestone. And here to celebrate with me, I've got two guests, a husband and wife duo. So that's a different kind of approach for us tonight. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what you guys have to share tonight and your perspectives on te reo Māori and how it fits within the contemporary context of Aotearoa and also other languages, because you don't just speak English and te reo Māori, but there are other languages in the mix as well. Ko wai kōrua, who are you? Please introduce yourselves with whatever you feel is interesting or relevant for us tonight.
Kia ora, Sally. Tēnā koutou. O tira, tēnā tātou. My name is Te Atahia.
Kia ora tātou. My name is Davide.
He mokopuna tēnei. Aotea horuatanga o Wairarapa. Ngāti kahungunu ki Wairarapa, rangi tāne, ngāti hāmua, ngāti ira. He tātai hononga whakapapa nōhoki ki Ngāti Porou, ki Te Arawa Waka, ki Ingarangi hoki, ko Hurihanga Nui, ko Te Kōwhai, ko Reiri, ko Rūtene, o Kuingoa Whānau. I have many nicknames, and my nicknames tend to weave me into the story of my identity, I think. So one of them is Tahia, or Tara Berry for short, which is a whānau nickname. And that talks to the bilingual upbringing that I had as one of four kids in Wairarapa, born and raised in Masterton, and then the Hawke's Bay, and then later in Pitone, Wellington. And another is Peps, because I am the mātāmua, the oldest child, but also the oldest grandchild, and Peps as a shortened version of Pepe, which is what my dad has always referred to me as, which talks to the wonderful relationship I have with Dad, who was a native speaker of Te Reo, and The Girl, which is another family nickname, a term of endearment that Mum and Dad use between themselves, which talks to the very special relationship I have with my mama. We're currently in Mama's house at the moment because we've just recently returned from overseas. So I just wanted to acknowledge her this week. Te Wiki o Te Reo Māori. She was absolutely part of the upbringing of myself and my siblings in the bilingual household and community that we were in. And Ti, or Tahia, which is my professional nickname, and that connects me to a number of different communities I'm sure we might mention a little bit later on in the kōrero. But I think the most relevant part of my whakapapa and pepeha is my love for language and my love for different cultures and the learnings that has always provided me as an individual, which has moved into my parenting journey with Davide here. So I'll pass it over to you, amore.
Ciao a tutti. No Italia aku tipuna, i tipu aha o i te maru o te maunga etna, i te tata o te awa achi, i te rohe a iwi o hihiria. As you can probably get from my accent, from New Zealand, but originally from Italy. I was born in Rome, but both my parents are from Sicily. I came to New Zealand in 2008. I was only meant to be here for 1 year. The Atahia changed my journey, my life journey in a way, and so I'm still here after 18 years. So we go to beautiful Tamariki. together. I'm a physiotherapist and an educator at the same time, and been a faculty in Masterton for the past 7 years.
Davide, when you say you're an educator, what do you educate in?
Sure, sorry, I should be a bit more specific. So I teach a course called First Aid in Rugby. So I contract to New Zealand Rugby and I teach first aid specific for the game of rugby at a community level. So not just for physios, but for coaches, parents, everybody involved in the sport. I'm also an educator for Tetiriti as well. It's something that I started doing around 5 years ago. And as part of my job, not just teaching healthcare.
Very cool. Oh, so you guys bring a wealth of knowledge to this. And Aya, you are an educator as well.
Yeah, I think it's been interesting the last maybe 5+ years, Davide, getting into education, because for so long it was my main profession. Our oldest is 10 now, so I started teaching a little bit before becoming hapū with him. And as we started the parenting journey, which of course was trying for a pēpi, I was very adamant to Davide that I didn't want to let go of having the connection with my students and learners, because I really do love teaching so much. I come from two teachers as parents. Mum and Dad actually met at Teachers College, and Dad's two parents were academics in their time. And I suppose relevant to tēnei, te wiko te reo Māori, they were tutors during the Ngā Tamatoa Te Reo Māori Society grouping. And they were around the same age as lots of the students, of course, who were frequenting their classes, and they were very heavily involved in the petition, which of course has now manifested into this really important week that celebrates everything te reo. So that's my background, and I've always wanted to be involved in educating or transferring knowledge. So it's quite handy having another educator in the house now, because I feel like we can share ideas that are practical, and then we can go and apply them in our classrooms. And part of that, of course, has been becoming parents, which is really the biggest learning teaching journey of all.
And Davide, what brought you to wanting to educate on Te Tiriti?
When I came to New Zealand for the first time, to be able to work as a physio, I needed to go through a registration, so I had to register my degree so that I could be accepted here in New Zealand. And part of the registration, one of the parts was about understanding Te Tiriti or Waitangi. So that was my first exposure to that. But when I went through it, I found that I didn't go very in depth. So it was like, do you understand about Te Tiriti or Waitangi? And then you explained yes. And then, yeah, you kind of tick that box. I went through that. And then I was confronting myself to Te Ataha, yeah? Because we come from very different background, me coming from the Western world and confronting myself with somebody who's indigenous. So we had some very fiery conversation together, obviously. So when our kids were born, I think that was important, kind of one of my duties to learn about it. And also, like I always say, I was being passionate about education, because both of my parents were both teachers and school teachers. And say, like, if you understand, if you can teach something, that means you've got good knowledge of it. So I said, that could be a good thing for me to do. And then obviously I got passionate about it, and now it's been moving on and evolved. Yeah, but I also understand that Te Tiriti Waitangi is one of the reasons why I can immigrate into New Zealand as well.
Not that we were highly critical of Davide or anything like that. I'm pretty sure most of my whānau members were really welcoming, but I can only imagine that it would have been quite daunting, because I teach Te Reo Māori. I teach a number of languages, but Te Reo Māori has always been one of them. My father and brother both run a consultancy firm, and they teach anti-racism and decolonisation and Te Tiriti o Waitangi. A sister of mine is a journalist, a brother is a doctor in healthcare, And so, of course, we can have some quite intellectual discussions about things Māori, te ao Māori, tikanga Māori, what it's like to be Māori in the world in a kind of settler colonial context. And in comes Dāwhere, tangata tiriti, from another kind of colonizer's land, I suppose, and culture. So it's always been a really important focal point, I suppose, and being really intentional with our, not just parenting, but with our relationship and what we can provide each other in terms of knowledge development. I suppose going forward, we might look at partnering in the tiriti education space, because that's something I too am quite interested in. We haven't got that far yet, though. It's just a piece of paper at the moment.
Yeah, that's certainly interesting, isn't it? The idea of tangata whenua and tangata tiriti together leading education in that space.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's also really relevant to our language journey. And I've always been mindful that David has chosen Aotearoa New Zealand as his home and is now a citizen. So raising his kids so far away from his land and his whānau and his cultural norms, we made a conscious decision when we were hapū with our 10-year-old and then again with our 7-year-old, that Italian language would be the predominant language in our household and between us, helped by the fact that clearly there's a mother tongue, but I'm fluent in Italian, which means that we have to be really mindful of how best to bring te reo Māori to them, and how best to prioritise or value Italian and te reo Māori.
So I'm fascinated. How do you manage it?
Pretty lucky that Te Atahia decided to speak my native tongue to our kids as their first language. There's different ways we could have done it. Our son Mario is now 10, so when he was born 10 years ago, I think it wasn't that good as to have a conversation. Tahia decided not to be excluding me in those conversations and say, let's do something that speak a language that we both know and be fluent around it too. So I'm catching up now, but it's really important for me and for my family back in Italy that the kids could speak Italian, because none of my family can speak English. So they could communicate and have a good relationship with them. And now, obviously, kids can also speak te reo, and we found different avenues or ways or context. We try to create context that if they don't happen to us naturally, to be able to be mindful and speak te reo Māori as well.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I had the privilege of being raised bilingually is because we are 90s babies, myself and my siblings. So we had the opportunity, even in rural Wairarapa, to go to kōhanga reo when we were in our early learning years, and then kura kaupapa Māori for our primary and intermediate years. We also had the opportunity to go to whare kura. I actually chose to try mainstream in high school, but I suppose that's relevant to what David is saying, which are contexts. Unfortunately, if you don't have those really specific spaces or places to use or learn te reo, as parents we've noticed, you've kind of got to create them yourselves as co-parents. And that was the hardest thing. We're living in a monolingual English-speaking society predominantly, and having to create moments that were totally immersive Māori language moments was actually really easy when the kids were so small, because they acquire so quickly. But it's gotten progressively harder as they've aged, because they've got different hobbies and interests and sports, and therefore they're interacting with lots of other speakers of mainly English or other languages. So I'm trying to value and create repetitive, consistent real Māori speaking environments has been hard. Helped, thankfully, in the last few years with a brother of mine who has actively chosen with his partner to raise their child, who's now 4, so the only cousin and nephew currently in our little whānau, in te reo Māori only. So they're a te reo Māori only speaking household whānau. So there's another context for us and our kids.
Yes, I agree. Also for my strengthening of te reo, because when I'm on him, like, he's like a little dictionary to me. I always ask him, how do you say this in Māori, in te reo Māori? And he gives you the answer. So it's a very lovely relationship. Yeah.
I lived in Germany when I was younger, and one of the pieces of advice I was given was to go and volunteer in a preschool, precisely because of that reason. The kids are very happy to keep repeating themselves.
Yes,
it's all kind of a game if you don't understand what they're saying. It was a great way to learn.
Oh, for sure. I think kids are such expressive users of language. They use their hands, they use their bodies. They're quite emotive. They can be really patient, especially if it's in the context of play. I failed to mention earlier, part of my high school journey in mainstream was going to Costa Rica for an exchange in my last year. And so I acquired Spanish, but I actually think I learned the most simply being with the niece of the household. So my host sister had a little, she would have been about my nephew's age now, about 3 or 4. And she would use every opportunity to play with me, and her only language was Spanish. And so thanks to those one-on-one moments, it just kind of, rapid fire learning for that. So we know the value of having kids and time with kids. I think what's getting harder is planning to make sure that the consistency and the repetition stays high, eh?
So your household speaks Italian primarily amongst yourselves. The kids then go to Kurukopapa Māori or mainstream where they're hearing English? What language is their education in?
They go to a Montessori school.
Okay.
So the main language is English.
We chose the Montessori because it's also an earth school, because while it doesn't have the reo, and we know that we can provide those spaces and contexts, what it does have, which has been an interesting dynamic, are other Māori values inherently part of their learning philosophies. And so an example is a marakai, a food forest that is huge and is on site that the kids interact with more than they don't. So they are constantly growing food seasonally by the maramataka Māori. And they have, because of their attachments to things like ngātua Māori, our deities, who provide the kai, and because of their science and practical-based learning, they're getting a lot of what I would have got at Kurukopapa, but perhaps not in that total immersive real situation. So I call that, we often forget about the layers of reo. Like reo is not just reo a waha, like what comes out of our mouth when we want to communicate. Reo is how we communicate in all ways. And I think like holistic reo is one example of another type of reo Māori. Reo te taiao, the language that we speak in our relationship with the environment, which is unique to te ao Māori. Reo mātauranga, the way in which we speak through values and kawa and tikanga, and we found that was the best fit for our little Māori Italian kids, eh?
And then you do the third language is te reo in particular contexts in the home environment when it's the family all together and the waina whānau as well.
Yes, that's right. So just we gave the example before of our little nephew that speaks te reo Māori. When the kids were younger, we used to do, we call it fariki time. So we had this mat that we would roll out. And then when the mat was rolling out, when you were standing in the mat, we would only speak in te reo. Different games, read books or tell stories. And every day before every meal, the kids and us do a karakia. Normally you do one karakia. Our kids like to do three.
Ceremonious reo or ritual reo is very big for us, not just our little whānau, but our wider extended family. The kids are very much part of tohi ceremonies, and they're often on the marae when I'm at a wānanga or a noho. They are always invited into hui when we're, having those types of maybe big, even high level hui with iwi or hapū or marae. So those are other really specific contexts. And we learned about the importance of contexts. They're called, what's the word for them? Language. Yeah, a language domain. Through kura whakaraura. So kura whakaraura is no longer, to my knowledge, running operationally every year. perhaps for budget constraints, but it was an offshoot of the kura reo movement. And kura whakaraora, individuals or families or organisations would go along not to learn te reo Māori or how to speak te reo, but learn how to plan and strategise using more te reo, with the long-term goal or aspiration to become fluent users of te reo. And we went along. So we went along as a family, because while we're speakers of te reo and maybe at different ends of the spectrum of fluency and competency, we realise really quickly it's not about what you have, it's actually about the output, the input-output, and it teaches you how to best plan. And we got lots of tips, tricks and strategies that we still use today.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that to really learn a language, you need a time, a place and the context, you know, this place at this time within this context. That's when you speak. They do the example of the yellow tape that is on the ground. Once you cross the tape, that's when you start language. It's like you're crossing the border to a different country where they only speak that language, and there's no way, you know, you can use your, if English is your language, you can use the English to learn it. So you have to force yourself to be able to do that, and that's how you retain.
Yeah, one of my biggest learning moments at the course, Kura Whakaraora, was learning that hearing and seeing more te reo Māori than ever doesn't actually mean that it's more alive than it has ever been. And actually, sometimes we get quite complacent in the comfort of that, right? Because seeing and hearing is one thing, but using and speaking is the only way it transfers between us and between us and the next generation. So if we're all kind of comfortable thinking, great, te reo's really alive because I can see and hear it all the time, but we're not actually speaking it, then very quickly it becomes closer to death again. So that was quite eye-opening for me as a reo Māori speaker who speaks other languages every day in my profession and at home, was what is my active contribution to actually using it, and how am I going to be accountable to myself and to my husband and to our babies who we're trying to raise multilingually.
And so what kind of conclusions have you come to? How can you be more active or more kind of conscious or present?
Me personally, it's an ongoing journey. So, you know, courses, choosing to be immersed regularly in environments when you can practice and speak te reo Māori. For example, we meet once a week with different services around in Masterton, and then we encourage everybody to use te reo Māori. I just started a course of Te Atarangi. It's not just a few hours that you spend there, but just how can you use it throughout, you know, to writing, for example, to having some conversation with Tahia, for example, a cup of tea, and you just speaking through or texting or messages, a particular person where that is going through the same journey that I'm doing, and have their support and practice. That, and then everything trickles down to our Tamariki and kids that are exposed, and if we lead by example, so they can see that that's what we do.
So that's funny. I was just having a giggle at David's first comment, because while I grew up speaking te reo, arguably I kind of stopped speaking every day when I was a kid, you know. So my most comfortable language for most of my childhood was probably te reo in a lot of ways. But as soon as I was a teenager, it was English, because it was the language of my friendships, of my teenagehood, of the experiences I was having beyond school, outside of the house, through sports and things. So I would probably agree, even as someone who grew up speaking te reo, active learning and understanding that language to stay alive, but also just to thrive, to have a healthy kind of presence in our lives, has to be continuously looked at and analysed and practised. So I too try to attend as many kura reo as I can in my busy life. If I'm not doing that, it's about knowing what literature's out there, what new podcasts I can listen to, different dialects that I can, listen to and understand. My brother and I have some really amazing access to some beautiful taonga and lots of the books that have either been handed down for generations or through our dad's work a lot of the time. He's actually currently living at the village Whakarewarewa up in Rotorua, and he's in one of the old whare, and it's full of these very, very old manuscripts, all written in te reo, published in te reo. And some of the reo we can barely decipher ourselves. So it's kind of, you know, the understanding that reo is constantly evolving and transforming too. And so learning for me has become like, what do I need the reo for? And sometimes it's because of my students. And so there's that really kind of standardized reo, and sometimes it's for my kids and they're into all these new things. Like, we didn't have a lot of their interests when I was a kid, so I'm having to learn all of these new words and new foods and just new kind of perspectives of the world. They're all new words and vocabulary for me. And then I think lastly, a passion and enthusiasm, and part of that passion means being able to sit in the discomfort of what we don't know, and owning when we make the mistakes, and also owning that, like parenting, we're never going to get it right or perfect, but we're constantly trying, and it's helpful being in a partnership where we're both really constantly trying our best.
I think that nowadays there are so many resources available and courses or apps that are free, like Korerorero, from simple words, simple kupu, to there's a scaffolding learning into sentences, and then maybe a few minutes a day, other apps are drops or Maori Made Easy books, Scotty Morrison, that resources for any level. Very fluent speaker, they are still learning perfection in the language to real beginners. We can say there's no excuse that there is accessible to everyone.
Yeah, and all learning styles, yes, and all learning ways. I think the hard thing perhaps for most Kiwis, and I say this because I teach people from all walks of life, different cultures and different ages. I think culturally, generally speaking, Kiwis find it really hard to sit in the discomfort of not being great at things to begin with, and having to, you know, sometimes face direct criticism or feedback. And culturally, having lived in Italy for a time, and we take our tamariki over to Italy to live every year and a half, and spend some, you know, decent amount of time there. Culturally in Italy, everything's quite direct and not as passive aggressive and very in your face in terms of, you know, people being able to say, actually, this isn't enough, you need to do more, or there's this way or there's that way, choose. Those types of ways of being, we find that really hard as a culture. And so what I try to do, understanding that, you know, there's a lot of shame that comes with the lack of knowledge of te reo, or perhaps you don't know where to start, is to perhaps start with your own emotional connection or relationship with learning. Because once you can break down the barriers of feeling emotions that inhibit you from consuming new knowledge, like a language, it makes learning language so much more fun and so much more relaxing and enjoyable. And when it's an enjoyable process, you can't help but want more.
Follow you mentioned the word connection. Language connects you to your roots, to where you're from, to the land that you're standing on. I am from Italy, but Italy has been united for 160 years now. So before we were different states, and nowadays every region, we got 20 different regions, speaks a different dialect, different language in itself. So my parents being from Sicily, speaking in Sicilian, and I think that this is very related to the Te Reo Māori here, because this is the language of this land. And I think that if we stand on this land, which gives us even more connection to the land and the people and the culture of this country.
That's so true. And just to kind of piggyback on that, you know, liken it to one thing we talk about at Kura Whakaraora is relationship language. So David and I met in Wellington, which means our first language of our relationship was English. But then very quickly I went over and lived in Italy with David and his parents and his brother, who
don't speak a word of English. And so after some time of being immersed in the culture and the family and the house and the home there, our relationship language switched to Italian. Now it's a weird mash of all three languages. But I suppose what's relevant about that is the act of seeking of other people, other like minds in our network and our friend groups and the interests that we seek that are perhaps on the same learning journey or have the same type of enthusiasm or value of Te Reo Māori. That would be my only other tip for others wondering about how this all works. The more people you have around you who either speak Te Reo or can champion it, you know, and some of our family members don't speak a word of Te Reo Māori but really value it and care about us doing it, the nicer the journey is.
Encouraging others to think about their own connection with the language and then encouraging others, the same sort of reflection that you guys have just led us through then. You know, what does it mean to you? What are you already doing? What would you like to be doing? And how might you go there? And I think that fostering of kind of other people becoming champions is, I'm sure, a huge part of this as well.
I think so. I don't think that the, you know, young people of the 1970s who, you know, walked from house to house, a door to door, collecting signatures for a petition to demand that Te Reo be recognised as an official language of this country, you know, were all fluent, perfect Reo speakers. Actually, on the contrary, most of them weren't Reo speakers. Many of them identified as Māori or identify as Māori. But like Davide was saying, really understand how incredibly powerful it is to know a language in lots of ways and to know it in a way that connects you to where you call home. And so the more that we can allow people the understanding of that, the more particularly non-Māori people can recognise their place in that, their responsibility to the place they call home. And, you know, it's not frightening, and no one can be, but it doesn't have to be. And more than that, I have overwhelming positive feedback from any and all people learning a little or a lot of Te Reo, because the more you learn about the land you call home, the more a part of that home you become.
Coming from overseas as a Tangata-Tiriti, I find that people that speak more than one language other than English language are more empathetic towards Māori that obviously trying to revitalize Te Reo Māori. In my personal experience, I found that people that immigrate to New Zealand from other countries engage more into the learning of Te Reo Māori than people that were born in New Zealand.
So many people forget two really fundamental parts of the history of language here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. One is the fact that for centuries, for hundreds of years, Te Reo Māori was the only language spoken on these lands that we all call home. So when the first tawiwi or outsiders arrived after the indigenous hapū Māori had very well established political, social, economic systems here, they had to themselves learn Te Reo Māori. And so those of us who are also Pākehā, or New Zealand European, who had ancestors who were arriving in the late 1700s, early 1800s, it's very likely, actually it's probable, that they were two bilingual Te Reo English speakers, because it was the only language of trade, the only language of society, was the only language in the comms that were being sent around the nation, i.e. through the first newspaper or newspaper. It was the only language in some of the first published books. And so that's a really beautiful
part of the history of reo here for those who identify as Pākehā or tangata tiriti or tawiwi. And then the other part is recognising that we are a minority in the world currently, that there are more people in the world and more nations in the world that are bilingual or multilingual. And so having two or more languages, whether it's te reo Māori or otherwise, is a connector. It's a connector to so many other people, cultures and things. And in a very tumultuous world and time, I think the more connection one has, the better their well-being can be. And I don't see anything wrong with that or anything negative either. Only good, positive things can come out of being able to communicate or express in different and multiple ways.
Oh, Toko, I could not agree more. How about in terms of keeping your Spanish, for example, alive, where you haven't got the whānau around you, you haven't got the language around you in your day-to-day, you haven't got Davide there speaking Italian as a native speaker. How do you kind of factor that in? Because that's another kind of language you've got there.
Yeah, thank you for asking. Sadly, I don't. It's probably hiding. It's sleeping.
Yeah.
There are lots of amazing apps. I use Duolingo and Drops. They're two of my favourite language apps because I'm also learning New Zealand Sign and Samoan language as well. So I think knowing the resources, knowing what's available and choosing ones that suit your lifestyle and your learning style. I'm very time poor, so apps seem to work really well for me. And we watch quite a lot of TV series that are Spanish language based, which have been really helpful. And I have some really great Spanish books and some that were gifted by Spanish tutors that I had many, many iterations ago, probably before having kids. So yeah, having access to rich resource books are still our go-to as a family. We're always looking for new books, whether it's online or at the Salvation Army or shops, anywhere and everywhere we can get hands on books. Often there are other languages in there. And pop culture brings us things like the crazes and the phases. I was just thinking there was the Dora the Explorer phase when our kids were little. It's K-pop at the moment, so that's a whole nother language and a can of worms we haven't gone down. But I think having the ability to kind of be open to what's there and also just actively finding time, and that's probably the hardest thing for a busy working mama, is finding time. So if we can kind of combine it with like a Netflix binge.
I think that's a great tip. How can you build it into your regular
interests? Not to say that we're huge TV people, but if we are watching TV, you know, why not make sure it's in an original language like Spanish or Italian?
I actually heard someone suggest that if you're trying to raise your children with multiple languages, incentivizing is a really good way. So, for example, if you want them to engage more with their second language, maybe they can watch a movie in that language, or they can stay up half an hour later if they're reading a book in that language, or something they really want to do, but they have to engage with the language to get it.
That's a great idea. Going back to relationship languages, we speak Italian only between us and to the kids when the kids are in the context or the space. But funnily enough, they speak to each other in English, and we figured out that despite the few months every year and a half over in Italy that we have there, the language of play for them is predominantly English. It makes sense that they're conversing in English between themselves because they're two kids. So trying to find like age-appropriate activities, context, resources and tools is like a constant challenge, especially with growing kids, because the interests can change from week to week sometimes.
Yeah, son is reading the Diary of a Wimpy Kid, so when we went to Italy we bought the same book but in Italian for him, so it's got something he's passionate about. And
it's in Tirol.
Harry Potter is another one.
Our daughter does gymnastics, and we found a little Italian language book with different gymnastics poses and instructions in it. Haven't yet found one in Māori, but we do follow a couple of Kiwi girls. They're actually Samoan, to my knowledge, by whakapapa, but they are doing really well in the gymnastics world, kind of on the world stage through social media. So it's just kind of connecting ourselves and the kids as individuals or as a whānau to what's out there, and like exposure, a constant exposure, input, output. But it's also tiring, so we also practice grace. Forgive ourselves when it's not always going to plan, or when the kids are kind of rolling their eyes at us when we really want them to speak in one language or express in another, and they're just not, and just practicing patience. And
yeah, there's so much in planning.
Yeah, it has to be natural as well.
That sounds great. I'm really, really impressed. I think it's amazing. How about if we think on a bit of a broader scale now, beyond the whānau? And we've talked a wee bit about encouraging others to think about the extent of their engagement and what they might like to do. But how about even broader than that, if we're thinking about institutions and organisations and businesses, how might people engage with te reo in those ways?
I've been working in different organisations in outer New Zealand. I can say that, especially in the healthcare sector, there is encouragement, there is need for organization to go to Te Tiriti o Waitangi. As you know, one of the articles was about supporting everything precious to Maori, and this includes the language. So there is the need that companies that do more, others that do less, about encouraging. For example, I work for an organization and they encourage reception. For example, when they answer the phone to the clinic, they use some greetings in te reo Māori, like kia ora, morena. Information clinic rooms, both in English and te reo Māori as well, and try to, let's say, make it as welcome as possible for Māori patients, and not just on Māori as well. We know looking at health in a holistic way, it's not just about the body and the physical care, but also from a spiritual, emotional point of view. But I can say this, different organizations have different levels of will. Some, unfortunately, they still work under the tick box. Yeah, we've done this, we say kia ora, and we are all good. But there's more that can be done. And through building relationships within different organizations, engaging with the iwi or other organizations, organization can learn and build from that. That's what I can say from experience.
I think there were lots of practical examples there. I think at the highest levels, whether it's, say, governance or leadership, management, it's about walking the talk. So often we hear organisations say they identify as a te tiriti partner, or they recognise te tiriti o Waitangi as one of the two foundational documents of this land. But what that needs to translate to is a budget that includes professional development for staff at all levels, inclusive of governance, so board members. It needs to have an investment that goes beyond learning and knowledge acquisition and translates into operational outcomes, like an HR process that heroes or values te reo speakers, people who understand tikanga or mātauranga, whether they're Māori or not, people who can articulate who the mana whenua of the organisation's space and place are, and then into things like the induction process. Are the staff actively seeking reciprocal relationships with mana whenua? Are the staff making use of the professional development and coming back and sharing their learnings with their colleagues? Are they measuring it somehow in critical analysis through, say, the KPI process when they're talking to their managers? I think we're at a really mature phase in the revitalisation of te reo, generally speaking, nationwide, but there's still so much more that we can do. And we can't always rely on listening to perhaps the government of the day and what they value or not, we have to rely on ourselves and the people around us. And one thing I can say, being not just Māori, but also having come from iwi governance space, is most Māori in those types of roles, if they are representing an iwi entity or a hapū or a marae, are more than willing to generously share time and resource and energy, but much more willing to do so if it's a reciprocal relationship and we don't feel like we're simply being used, that we can then maybe, you know, be shared with in terms of things that can support us. And I think you find that a lot in your work, eh?
Thinking about what you just said, Tahia, like when we are in times like the current times where there's no support for everything about the Māori culture, and it becomes more evident which people or organization are generally wanting to support being good 3D partners and support of the Māori as a culture as well. They're not just doing because somebody told them to do it, but they're actually generally carrying on. And that we understand that, obviously, you mentioned from a budget perspective, from a finance perspective, things are more limited. But they say in English, if there's a will, there's a way. So if you really value something, that will be still part of your priorities as a person, also as an organization.
Education, I think that's another big space where there's a lot that could be done in terms of, well, te reo, but language more generally. We talked about how a lot of the world has at least two languages, and Aotearoa, we are very much monolingual in most cases. What would you like to see happening in the education space?
I work in government sometimes. I work in the private sector, and my big love is community ed. I also work cross ages. So I started off in ESOL, so I taught predominantly adults, learning English as a second language or as a foreign language. Then I went to Italy and worked in ECE, so the young, you know, 0 to 5-year-olds in preschool age, as well as primary. And I've come back to New Zealand and now kind of work with all ages, predominantly adults. And what I've noticed in most of the Western world, actually, but definitely in New Zealand, is that we tend to put a lot of our budget, and it's not to say I have any interest of going into government or anything like that, but if I was in that kind of power with that kind of resource, I would definitely invest more in the early learning, the first 3 years. So give more money and more resource to the teachers with our most vulnerable and the young people, because what I see is this kind of unbalanced society where universities or other tertiary providers are getting a really amazing package in terms of the resource that they can then translate into the practical outcomes that they're giving their learners, and very, very little at the beginning. And you can kind of see that in the spectrum between teachers in ECE, teachers in primary, teachers in intermediate, high school, and their salaries, for example. You can just Google that and you'll see that very quickly in a teacher's wage. Why do I say that? Well, because if you're investing in the teachers who are with our most vulnerable, those first few years of a child's life, then they're acquiring language and all the other amazing things that ECE teachers do, providing care, developing relationships, etc., etc. And those little kids then become big kids, and those big kids then become bigger kids, and those bigger kids then become young adults who have already acquired te reo Māori, for example. And acquisition is the natural ability to be or speak or do a language, rather than something that you have to study or learn, which is a much harder process and tends to happen a little bit later on, because then they become the adults and the parents who are then just naturally doing the same thing all over again with their young ones. And so you have this thing called critical mass, you know, more people who have just been naturally raised in, say, a bilingual or multilingual environment, well-resourced, well-supported, who are just kind of going through that cycle.
which unfortunately we lost through things like legislation. And so that's definitely something I would do. And then the other thing I would do in education is putting a bit more focus on valuing all of the extra things teachers do across the board. And it's beyond the classroom, it's beyond the typical work hours, and understanding how critical the relationship between a teacher, particularly our good teachers, and students are. And if we can resource them well, I think we'd have a really good shot at full revitalization. There's a difference between whakaora, which is to revive something that has pretty much died, and whakaraora. And whakaraora is not just about bringing something back from death, it's actually about it thriving. So I'm really big on how do we get to that stage. And one of the pleasing tohu or signs for me that te reo Māori is going towards that pathway or trajectory is when there's diversity. So if and when I can hear tangata tauiwi and tangata tiriti learning and speaking te reo, that's part of the diversity of reo, not just Māori speakers speaking it. If I can hear dialects being used and passed from generation to the next generation, that's diversity. Diversity is a sign of not just something that is living, but something that is thriving. So more of that, please.
Yay.
That's my karakia every day, Sally. That everyone recognises their individual responsibility. Because again, you don't necessarily even have to be a speaker of te reo to help with the revitalisation process. It's like revitalising anything. I do some work at Pukaha National Wildlife Centre. It's a natural reserve. We're trying to get our native manu numbers up. And some people are the caretakers and some people are the rangers and the conservation specialists and experts. And some people are the people who work in the cafe making coffee for the people coming in to visit. But those people who come in to visit pay money, and that money pays the salaries of those rangers and conservation experts. So everyone has a role to play. And I think te reo Māori revitalisation is the same. Whether you're a speaker or a champion, everyone has a role to play.
And it doesn't have to be grand, does it? It can be as simple as kia ora or karakia at the beginning of a meeting or something.
For sure. And it's also sometimes maybe not even participating or experiencing karakia verbally, but being okay for 5 or 10 minutes not knowing what's happening. Actually, sometimes it's just mentally and emotionally having a break from having to be in the leadership space, which is really what an English language speaker has in New Zealand. You're constantly privileged. So perhaps being in that humble space of, I don't know what's actually happening right now because I don't speak te reo, but being okay with that. That's as small as it can be. And that really makes a difference for someone who is perhaps a little bit nervous about saying a karakia aloud. Knowing that the people around them are respectfully listening can be the difference between that person saying another karakia again or not. And so that can be the smallest contribution. And I think that's probably bare minimum.
Yes.
Respect.
Yes, respect.
More than 80% of the English we use is not actually English in origin. So kind of technically in a weird roundabout way, we're all multilingual. I think a big part of this is attitudes. And we've all got control of how we perceive things, how we consume things, and how we react to things. And I do think a lot of people can get that part better.
I think what you're saying is sort of being mindful and being conscious of the role that each of us as individuals can play.
And knowing that that means, again, you're connected and you're part of a majority, because I would like to think that most people who call Aotearoa New Zealand home are at the very least respectful.
I think it's more than that. I think people are really interested as well. I think there's a lot of people who are really interested in te reo and tikanga and te ao Māori and want to learn.
I suppose like people, they're both sides of the spectrum, right?
There's always going to be a broad spectrum. The people at this end who are doing everything in their power to help or support or learn more because they are genuinely interested or have a whakapapa reason, or like you said, are just generally interested in learning. And then the other people at the other end who have no interest in developing personally or professionally, and everyone in between. And I think the only way this is going to work is if we can get more people down the end of the spectrum that is about value and loving and, you know, being enthusiastic about te reo.
So if there's one thing you would like to say to wrap up the kōrero today, what would it be?
We spoke before about how we, you know, we're celebrating 50 years from the Sun Petition for te reo Māori. Like Taya mentioned before, we need to remember that for hundreds of years before the first European, you know, arrived here in Aotearoa, their language has been spoken in different forms, in different dialects, but te reo Māori was spoken on this land too. We are at the point today where there's a process of revitalization, and I really encourage everyone in Aotearoa, New Zealand, to engage, even in the smallest part, respectful in the Māori environment, pull up your app and some Māori kupu, some Māori words, or sign up for courses, read books to your kids in te reo Māori, any form that you can take to respect the language of the people of this land.
How to conclude? I opened with my whakapapa, speaking to the various iwi or ancestors I descend from. And then I talked about the different nicknames that I have, which in many cases are terms of endearment by my loved ones, but in some cases were needed because of my long Māori name, Te Atahia e Raina Hurihanganui. So I suppose my hope for my kids, having Māori Italian names, Mario Kapua Kasturina and Mare Kura Anna Kasturina, is that they, not just as children, but then as adults and maybe one day as parents, will only ever know a life in a world that knew them completely, respected and valued them completely, and allowed them to be and thrive as they inherently were supposed to, rather than like their mama and all of the generations before me having to intentionally or purposefully do things in certain ways because of the lack of or the inhibitions, that they will just be absolutely free. And I feel really hopeful, and the whakaraura rather than the whakaora is about a future where te reo Māori is thriving. And I'm absolutely grateful to be part of that, even if it's going to be as a tupuna or an ancestor. And then lastly, ko te Māori ki roto, ki waho, ki runga ki raro, understanding that yeah, there's a beautiful connection that happens between one with the land and with the bigger essence of what it is to be a human being, I think, when one learns the Indigenous language of the land that they call home. And that's a beautiful thing, and I really hope that more people get to experience that.
And our kōrua, thank you very much. Kupu atahua to finish us up with. Thank you very much.